Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, November 13th, 2023. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded. As usual, the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people who are joining through phone calls. You can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone who is on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you go to if you click on the more icon, you would see I'm trying to find it right now and I can't do it. Well, there is an icon to raise hands virtually. And if you're able to use your tools, it will be helpful because then we would know if somebody's trying to make comments and we can have one speaker at a time. everyone should be on mute. At this point, I would request for you to stay on mute unless speaking. It helps eliminate in any external noise. Just a friendly reminder that we have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. I would request everyone to please state your name before your comments. It helps the interpreters in doing their job. It also helps everyone who is on the phone call knowing who the speaker is at the time. And when people listen to the meeting audio afterwards, it helps them as well. We will have... Chair Calabia, if you permit, I can go over the agenda and then take the roll call for the committee members.
Sure, please do.
Okay. And before I start reading the agenda, I would share my screen. And as soon as it's visible, if somebody can confirm it for me, I would appreciate that.
I can see it.
Thank you. So after I finish reading the agenda for today's meeting, we would go through the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, Tina Calabia, chair of BRS, would go through the review and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. At 4:10, we have Scott Winley. He is from Access Board to discuss the public right-of-way access guidelines. At 4:45, we have our team from bus planning to discuss WMATA bus stops as that has been discussed by the committee in past. At 5:15, we have a team to discuss and share information about the upcoming Red Line stations closure in December. Those stations would be Metro Center, Farragut North, and Gallery Place. At 5:45, we will take any public comments, and at 6 p.m., the meeting is scheduled to adjourn. I would stop sharing my screen now.
Okay.
I'll be calling out names of the AAC members. When I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Azhar Atura, Darnese Bush.
Alert, audio now unmuted, leaving menus.
Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Present.
Thank you. Tuan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangren.
Present.
Thank you. Philippa Mazel. Sandy Newsom.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Dr. Posner is connected with us. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Samelford.
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Patrick Sheehan. Kelly Simonow. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes our roster for today's meeting. I would be on the lookout to see if any AAC members joined later, and I will mark their presence accordingly.
Anu, I'm sorry. I had another phone call coming in. I'm not sure if you called Theresa Thomas.
This roll call is for only AAC members at this point.
Oh, okay. All right.
Thank
My
you.
Apologies.
No problem. All right, Chair Calabria, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes. The next item is the agenda, right? Review and approve the agenda?
Yes, it is.
Okay, maybe you could show it on the screen.
One moment. Okay, it should be visible now.
Yeah. If you members would review the agenda, which is on the screen, I'll take a motion to approve.
So move. Martha Goldsmith.
A second, anyone?
A second from Sandy.
This is Rico.
Any objections to the agenda? If not, the motion has been seconded. Can we get approval from the members?
Approved.
Approved.
Okay, the agenda as seen on the screen at the moment is approved. And the next item is Scott Windley. Is he on board, Anu, do you know?
Chair Calabria, would you like to go through the motion of approving last month's meeting minutes?
Oh, sorry, yes. With respect to the last month's meeting minutes on October 10th, Melissa Kim briefed us on the Better Bus Network redesign. We also talked about the bus rail subcommittee work plan, and under that, we talked about the access board standards, the $750 million deficit, which we addressed as, among other things, saying that, that we would individually approve our jurisdictions, which hold the purse strings for this. We also talked about the static signs at L'Enfant Plaza and Metro Center. And actually, Sandy has mentioned that again. In terms of those signs, we wondered about how the signs would be made accessible to people with who are deaf. And Sandy mentioned there are some Braille. In any event, that's a summary of the minutes. You all have had 2 weeks to review the minutes. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Vanessa, I approve the minutes as read.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that, Tino.
All desks.
This
Zoom.
Is Rico. I second.
Disabled participant screen sharing. Escape. Zoom.
Having had a motion seconded, and let's see, would all members again voice their approval of the minutes as reviewed?
This is Thomas. Approve.
Approve.
Thank you.
Approved.
The minutes are therefore accepted as written and approved. The next item is the public right-of-way access guidelines. Is Scott Winley here at this time?
Chair Calabia, this is Anu. I would stop sharing my screen at this time. I'm not seeing Scott Winley on unless he's on a phone call. Mr. Winley, if you are on a phone, you might want to come off of mute. If he is not connected at this point, Chair Calabia, we could go to the next topic, which is WMATA bus stops, and I believe the team is connected already.
Okay, so the team to discuss WMATA bus stops is here, and it includes Al Himes, and I see Charlie Dingboom is on.
Yes.
I don't see Al Himes, but if he's here, could you speak up, please?
Yes.
Yep. So, yep. Good afternoon. I'm Al Himes, I believe that this afternoon you wanted to talk about our bus stop, the bus stop guidelines for Metro bus. So also listening in with me while during this, and then can answer any, help me answer more specific questions, or Charlie Dingboom and Rocket Chowdhury, but. I'll be going through, I have a presentation to share with you all, so I will go ahead and.
Sure. Please.
Okay, it looks like somebody needs to allow me to share, but.
Al, you should be able to do that.
Okay, there it is.
I don't see anything on the screen. Does anybody?
No, I'm working on it. It's.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Do you all see the presentation?
We're seeing your calendar, your invite.
Okay. Okay. Sorry about this. Okay, I believe. Okay.
Okay, we see it now.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so so we just wanted to go through we've been working at taking a look at our bus stop guidelines and a number of additional bus stop types and things have come up throughout the years, more to make multimodal transportation improvements, and our guidelines did not address some of these newer bus stop types coming along. So we've been working with the jurisdictions to look at these different bus stop types. So are well involved in that process and wanted to share with you some of the stuff that we've been working on and the stops that we've been looking at. So overall, the objectives of our bus stop guidelines, safety is, one of the utmost priority of bus stop guidelines. And this safety covers our customers waiting for the buses to arrive, how customers board and exit the buses at the stop, customers getting to and from those bus stop waiting areas, how our buses access, and the safety of the buses standing in the bus stop zones when they're loading and unloading, and as well as the other modes traveling past the bus stop zones. In addition to that, we also want to make sure that we're providing quality service. So that includes comfortable waiting areas, service information about the bus service that's serving those stops, and also supporting bus priority measures, to help give us faster travel times system-wide. So as I mentioned, there's a number of these newer multimodal bus stop types coming about. So we were taking a look at bus stop guidelines to address these emerging multimodal roadway designs. These new bus stop types include modular platforms, a bulb out with a stormwater trench, a medium bus stop, three different types of island bus stops, including the standard island, the narrow island, and a shared bus bike island, and also the mixing bus bike stop, which we've seen pop out in some places around the region. So then just to give you an overview of what some of these different stops look like. And most of this here is I just have some examples of what these stops look like. And then was just looking, you know, to see what comments you all have for us on the different stop types that we've been looking at. So the first one is the modular platform. So this is, you know, primarily the district's been using this, and this is, you know, the district is purchasing a prefabricated platform that gets put down in the parking lane of the street. Therefore, the bus is able to stay in the travel lane, and there's a platform that the passengers can easily step on and off the bus. This one in the example also shows that behind this modular platform, this crosses a bike lane, and that bike lane includes a raised crosswalk. So that raised crosswalk works as a calming measure for the bikes crossing that pathway to get from the main sidewalk out to the bus platform. The second example was the bulb out with the stormwater trench. So this is that sometimes when the jurisdictions are building these bulb outs to provide additional space at the bus stop, there's some stormwater drainage issues that they need to address. So they can't just fill that bulb out all the way back to the curb. They need to leave an area for the stormwater drainage. So they are placing a small section of grates that connect the main sidewalk to that bulb out, similar to some of the other drainage systems in the regular sidewalk. So standard grates that are used in a lot of different sidewalk applications for stormwater drainage. There's also the medium bus stop. These are mainly used on, you know, some of the BRT applications in the region. The biggest example of this would probably be on the Metroway in Virginia, where there's a special bus lane down the middle of the roadway, and there's bus platforms that serve that special roadway in the middle with then the regular travel lane sitting behind those islands outside the bus islands and the bus right of way that runs down the middle of the roadway. And typically these are connected through the main crosswalks at the intersection to access those islands. There's also a standard island bus stop. So this is basically putting an island out, you know, so there's a typically the sidewalk and then there's a crossing of a bike lane, taking people out to a bus island. And this bus island would, a standard island would have enough room for a bus shelter and the proper sized pad for, you know, boarding and alighting all users of the bus on that island without interfering with the operation of the bike lane. And then some sort of protection between the island and the bike lane, delineating specifically where those crosswalk locations are for the bike lane. So there are specific marked crosswalks versus just being able to cross the bike lane for the entire distance of the island, which we're trying to prevent in these applications. The next one is a narrow bus island. So this is similar to the standard island, with the exception of that there's not enough room for the bus shelter actually on the bus island. So the bus island still sits back on the sidewalk side of the bike lane. And then there's a crosswalk across the bike lane to access the bus boarding and lighting area when the bus approaches the stop. And then another example is the bus bike shared stop. So this is an example. The district has used this application in a few locations. And this is where there's a passenger waiting area, and then the area where the bike lane comes up onto that raised platform area. And when the bus is there, the expectation is that the bicycles will yield to the customers boarding and alighting. The bus in that area would be used for bus boardings and alightings. This is also another picture of one of those, example of one of these in the district, where the district's taken some additional measures to add detectable warnings and railings to this stop type to both protect the safety of the passengers boarding and alighting the bus and the bikes traveling through the stop. Also, just some pictures of a few bike lane calming strategies that the jurisdictions are working on for some of these shared stop locations. Because the jurisdictions do understand the need to make sure that the bikes are traveling safely through these areas and are taking measures such as channelizing the bike lanes, putting in changing grade to force the bicyclist to slow down, and other measures, adding turns and such that require the bikes to slowly travel through those areas. And that's just a repeat of the previous picture. So these are examples of things that we've been looking through with the jurisdictions. There's obviously a number of challenges associated with these guidelines and trying to find the best balance for the interest of all users and developing the best, multimodal systems that we can that work for all of the multimodal users of our transportation networks. So at this point, we're open to hear any questions that you have for us or comments that you'd like to share with us.
Yes, this is Tino again. You've shown some pictures, and a few of them have bus shelters, but I don't think the first one has, or at least the prefabricated bus lanes you show don't have shelters. And even if you show some with shelters, are these let me back up. There are some without shelters. Many people, including people with disabilities, have to wait a long time with or without shelters. But without shelters, there don't seem to be a lot of examples of how people could rest while waiting a long time. There are bus stops, plenty of us have seen bus stops without any seating at all. What are the plans to provide seating at more, if not all, bus stops?
I mean, currently our guidelines also include, guidelines on, they're based on the number of boardings that we're seeing at a bus stop and what sort of amenities we have at the stop. Bus stop amenities are a significant capital expense. So in prioritizing how we most effectively use those capital dollars, we have to sort of prioritize what amenities go to what stops. I mean, ideally, yes, it would be great if we had the ability to have all those amenities at every single bus stop that we serve. Our jurisdictional partners have just not had the budgets available to complete those projects for every single stop that we serve. So we do have guidelines to sort of prioritize what stops should have those amenities based on the ridership at those stops.
Well, budget limitations are understandable, but you also have seen, many of us have seen, that neighbors have placed chairs out near bus stops where there aren't any shelters or any seating for waiting riders. It's a shame that it's up to neighbors to have to do that, but I guess that's answered by your question about budget priorities. Before I take questions about the pictures you've shown, I think you've seen the picture I forwarded last night regarding the electronic signs, that bus signs that appear in Bonn, Germany, which shows up to 8 lines of information. And on the ones that I sent you, it shows at least 7 different bus stops, bus lines that are sending buses to that one stop and when they're arrived. Before you answer that, let's get to some of the members regarding the pictures that you've shown us. Members, do you have any questions?
Chair Calabia, this is, I know we have several members with their hands up in the following order. Debbie Fisher, followed by Vanessa Coles, then Sandy Newsel, and then Phil Posner, Steve Caffin, and then Thomas Mangrum. So Debbie, go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you for your presentation. I have enormous concern about relying on bike riders' courtesy as they drive through all of these spaces that are basically shared with riders as they both attempt to cross to get on the bus and also when they come off. And I'm just wondering if it is possible to establish some standard. And right now we have laws that require cars to stop when a person enters a crosswalk. Is there something we can do either to activate crossing lights that would require a bike to stop the way cars do, or some way that we can retrain bike riders to not just calming areas, but actually stop to enable people to cross? Our disabled and elderly population is very easily stressed when they have to compete with these bike riders. And there's just nothing in any of these depictions that beyond the calming areas, but that's not enough. That still requires somebody to think of it themselves, and especially bike couriers who are in a hurry and so forth. They're on a deadline. So what can we do to ensure that, especially these are two sets of crosswalks that people have, and especially when they're not adjacent to the bus and they've got to cross over a bike lane to get to the bus and they're anxious to make it and all those things. I think we need to build in some physical barrier or a regulation that protects crossing.
Excellent, Debbie, and this reiterates and reinforces the problems that have been brought up by other Montgomery County representatives, including our long departed Charlie Crawford back many years ago, and also our current AAC chair, Patrick Sheehan. Do you have any answers for this, Al?
I mean, we've been expressing those concerns to our jurisdictional partners, because ultimately it's the DOTs across the region that are responsible for these roadways and building the stops. These stops are not on Metro owned property, nor is Metro doing the construction of these stops. But we have expressed those concerns, and that's also why we're working on this project to update our guidelines so we can get those types of things incorporated into guidelines and clearly communicate to the jurisdictions the types of things that we would expect to see at these stops throughout the region.
May I have a just quick follow-up? Just this is a point of information from anybody. Since I represent the COG Access for All Committee, would that be an appropriate place for me to bring this?
Yeah, go.
Yeah, John, sure. I believe the staff from the DOTs are probably involved in that as well. And that's, that's the primary people that, need to respond to this, because the DOTs are the ones building the stops.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Debbie. Next would be
alert. Audio now unmuted.
Yes, hi, this is Vanessa. Thank you for the presentation. I wanted to ask, is there security and safety wise, is there a consideration for security cameras in those areas, or are they on the building itself when you exit the subway station?
So I'm not quite sure I understand the question. Are you looking for security cameras at bus stops?
Yes.
Okay. Specifically at the stations or just on the road?
Where they're waiting to get buses, because a lot of crime take place around that area. So, and with crime increasing, cameras up in like the hutch area where you can, see what's going on. Security cameras.
I mean, it's not something that we were specifically looking at as part of this project. Not to say that isn't another need as well. There's probably other experts at Metro that Anu could reach out to have a more thorough discussion about safety and security issues, as far as safety in terms of crime and that type of stuff, as opposed to our focus, which is more safety related to access to a bus stop and making sure that there aren't trip hazards, or buses aren't getting rear-ended when they're waiting in a bus stop, or a bike isn't hitting a pedestrian and stuff like that.
Camera would be a good place to record something like that, though.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's I apologize, it's just not my area of expertise.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Question.
Thank you, Vanessa. Chair Carabia, were you trying to make a comment?
No, just the next question.
Okay, thank you. Sandy, you are next, so go ahead.
Hi, this is Sandy. Thank you for the description of the various
configurations of bus stops. The one where you sort of lay down a prefab bus island, a bus stop, pedestrian waiting area with just little posts at the front and the back of it. I guess after a while, car drivers would learn that they're not supposed to drive through that. That just looks a little flimsy to me. If I'm understanding the picture correctly, the traffic would be parallel to that and would be two lanes over to avoid the bus. I can picture a lot of car driver frustration as you eat away at lanes of traffic to make these bus islands, you know, the bus island or a bulb out, you're taking away traffic lanes. And yes, I understand in theory that slows traffic. But when all that is said and done, when a person, a senior or myself, a person with low vision is trying to get from the sidewalk or the bus shelter, which may not even be on the island, out to the bus, that is, like I think it was Debbie said, a stressful, anxious time. And knowing when the next bus is coming, and if there's more than one bus route there, what are the plans for where you would locate signage for the bus route stopping there? And is there any way that you would have sort of the next bus coming indicator? And I know if that gets into electronics, yes, that gets expensive, but I'm just curious if the signage has been thought about where is the most accessible place for people to see signage without, for instance, standing on a narrow bus island with traffic whipping by while you're waiting for a bus. I mean, what are your thoughts on where to place the signs to make the riders most comfortable waiting for a bus?
Yeah, so I mean, in this example, the picture doesn't show back on the regular sidewalk, but you know, that would be the most likely area where the signage and a shelter would be installed in this situation, would be back on the sidewalk. Again, you know, real-time information signage, bus shelters, you know, there's, those are prioritized based on ridership. So it could be that a particular location just doesn't have the ridership to qualify for those types of things at this time, when us and the jurisdictions are prioritizing the capital dollars that we have to spend on those amenities, knowing that we can't do every single stop.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
Thank you, Sandy. Next would be Phil Posner and then Steve Kaplan. So Dr. Posner, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I wonder if we could get a list of the bus stops that are controlled by the jurisdictions as opposed to those composed by WMATA, so that we could lobby the specific jurisdictions for those bus stops, because it should be their responsibility to get things done. The other thing that I might suggest, that treating a bus like a school bus would be very helpful. A stop school bus, everybody stops. Nobody goes around it. In this case, it's equally important because the bike lanes are going right by the entrance to the WMATA and city buses. And if we could get the state or the local jurisdictions to treat bicycles just like they do automobiles, which they do in Florida, then bicycles would not pass stopped school buses or stopped city buses. So the main thing we need is some information as to which are the critical stops in each jurisdiction that need help. And so if we can get a list of all of the stops in each jurisdiction that WMATA does not control, that would be very, very helpful. And then it's up to us as a committee to take care of the other stuff. Thank you.
So as a general rule of thumb, just to sort of take care of most cases, other than the bus stops that are at a rail station, so in the bus loops near a rail station, it's easy, or it's a good assumption that if they're not those, then they're controlled by the jurisdiction. So other than the ones that are legitimately next to our stations, everything else is controlled by the jurisdiction. So it would be coordinating through them. In terms of your second point, that's definitely a thing to lobby to the individual jurisdictions and potentially to the individual states as a change in their laws or rulemaking to change that treatment so that bicycles would need to adhere to a stopped bus in the same way they would have to adhere to a stopped school bus.
That's great. Thank you. The other thing is, if you could get the WMATA buses to get the little flags that come out when they stop, just like the school buses do, and have the flashing lights behind, which have the message, say, stop all vehicles, do not pass. It would be helpful because a lot of people don't know if they're allowed to pass a city bus. They know they can't pass a school bus, but a lot of people think they can. So it'd be nice to reinforce that either with the little arms coming out or the message on the back, which is very readable. Do not pass, bus stopped. Thank you.
Yeah. We would, state law would have to be changed to allow us to put that on our buses, because right now we can't legally add that stuff to our buses because by law they don't qualify for that signage legally.
Okay, so we need to lobby the governor and the legislature.
Yeah. You
know, we're going to have Scott Windley on hopefully this meeting or a future meeting, but the state and counties and other jurisdictions mainly use, or some of them at least, use federal funds to build their roads and other accommodations for traffic. And the federal use of federal funds requires them to follow the guidelines, the standards of the access board. So whether some of these things, I hope, can be answered when Scott Lindsay comes up with what the federal government requires of jurisdictions which use federal funds for accessibility and road building, etc. Next question.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Posner and Chair Calabia. Next is Steve Caffin, followed by Thomas Mangrum, and then Doris Stray. So Steve, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Al. For the last 6 years, I've been putting what I'm going to say in the annual budget letter, and I'm going to say it again. Al, you know, these are comments rather than questions. You may want to write them down or record them so you can take a look at these later. Of course, there are a couple. The first thing is that, as Tino discussed right at the beginning of the session, two lines is just too few for next bus information. We're the only bus system that I know in the world. And I just came from San Francisco and Los Angeles. I've seen so many. We're the only one that only has two. And the windup is people wait forever. And it's particularly difficult for people who aren't able to turn around and look for a long period of time waiting for the next bus information. However, that involves an expenditure. So let's put that aside. We're the only bus system in the world where it takes 7 seconds to iterate from one two-line screen to the next. It has nothing to do with the with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And in fact, this is the 7 seconds is most difficult for people with disabilities who, if they miss their information, may have to stand there for another minute to a minute and a half. And all they want to know is, when is my next bus coming? Once again, I urge that if nothing else, we do like New York, Boston, San Francisco, Chicago, use 2 to 3 seconds. If you miss it the first time, in 15 seconds, you can see it again. At 7 seconds, you miss it the first time, you're going to wait a minute to a minute and a half, and it's very taxing. Other thing I want to say is, Al, please take a look at the messages, because that two-line system is also being used for all kinds of WMATA messages. And it's not just your bus is delayed because of a backup. They're now putting on there, if you'd like more information about your bus line, connect to, and they give you the web address. I don't know how anybody can copy down the web address in the middle of the street, but that's what they're doing. The windup is, it's even taking longer to see your next bus information. Also, would you please ask the people who create these to be compact in their wording? You know, politeness and using more words than less words just makes people wait even longer for their bus information. Make them laser. And don't put general information in there, because what people want to know is, when is my next bus coming? And that's very important. I'm sorry, but I truly urge, Al, that you take a look at what other bus systems are doing and what Tino talked about at the beginning. They're managing 2 to 3 seconds. We're the only system I know that uses 7+ system. Oh, it's even longer than 7 seconds, because if the end of a bus line is more than one line in the next bus information, we may wait up to 12, 13 seconds for that entire name to iterate through. So Al, please take a look at this. One last thing, I'm very sorry about that. We had a presentation, Al, about 2 or 3 months ago about bus shelters and the proposed art in education. Bus shelters does not have glass on the sides, making it impossible for people who are standing in the shelters to see the buses coming. So would you take a look at that? It's a proposal at this point, but that glass is so important for people standing inside. And my question, Al, is people have comments relating to the shelters and bus stops and things like that. If they send them to customer service, they don't get a reply. Is there any email address that they could send them to that might get to your department? Thank you.
So I'll start with the bus shelters first. So the bus shelters with the art, those were intended to be temporary bus shelters until permanent bus shelters could be installed in those locations. And we were working through some internal issues with a contract for new shelters. You know, those contract issues have been resolved, and you should start to see those shelters replaced with the permanent shelter that's supposed to be in those locations. So that's in progress. As far as the real-time bus information signs, recently, all of our electronic signage and customer messaging has been, consolidated within our customer experience group. So now the same teams that are working on the signage in the rail system are also responsible for signage that's at the bus stop locations and the messaging. So all of that is consolidated with the same team. I can pass your comments along to that team, but the ultimately that, you know, how information is displayed and what the displays look like is, you know.
Okay, would you please?
Something that's part of bus planning and scheduling.
Thank you. Would you please, because I the rail information, next train information changes every 3 seconds. And if they're going to coordinate, that's very good news for the next bus information in kiosks.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah. Yeah, no, agree. And that was part of the initiative to consolidate all that within one team. So it is consistent of what we're doing between bus and rail. So they're not, you know, so like what you see in the rail system and how it's displayed is consistent with how it's displayed in the bus system. The other thing I'm reminded of too is that, you know, the customer experience team has reached out to us about a project that we're working on to standardize some abbreviations used on those signs in an effort to cut down on the amount of space it takes to display the information on those signs, you know, reduce or eliminate the scrolling as much as possible. So, you know, all the information can be seen on one display screen without it having to scroll to a second screen. So as part of our bus schedule information, we do update all the data that ends up going to those signs about like bus route names and stop names and such. So we are working on a project to, you know, clean up those databases that we have. So the customer experience teams that are managing the signs can then have more compact messages to more effectively display those, you know, on those signs and improve how that information is displayed.
Thanks, Al. Tom Magro?
Thank you.
Yes. Yes, this is Thomas. My thing is, and I want to step and stress on a lot of the stuff that people already talked about, going across the crosswalk to get to the bus. I think that the signage and stuff that telling the bikers to stop is really good, but the thing about it though is the law's got to be a force. Cause a lot of bikers, they used to be able to do what they want to do. They want other people to go by laws, what have you, but they don't really think about the ones who's walking or driving. So we need the police to be notified if they see a wheelchair user like myself trying to get to the bus, but they keep going across the bus line and not stopping for me to get to the bus, that it should give them a ticket. And also, for the electronic bus stops, Metro need to go and check different bus stops, because like for the G2 and the L bus, what have you, the bus, electronic bus signs, they on, but they're not really working. One bus stop I went to, it said 6 minutes before the bus come, and it was 20 minutes by the time the bus got there. And when the bus got there, it didn't even say that the bus was there. It just said 6 minutes. So it says 6 minutes for the whole time. So, and then plus when you press the button to try to find out how far the bus is, what time the bus is going to be there, that thing that bus come on to let you know, it wasn't even working. So you got some electronic bus signs that's not even working like they should. Okay. And then for the bus stops with the shelter, the bus will be there. Some of them some distance away from the bus. So we definitely going to need something, and we're going to need the law to force, because putting up signs and nobody enforcing the law, that won't really serve any purpose. It's not going to work. Because bikers, they get to do whatever they want and what have you, but other people got to obey the law when it comes to them. But they don't seem to think they have to obey the law when it comes to other people. Because, like, I have run across some rude people that are riding bikes when I'm trying to get the bus. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, thank you, Thomas. Next is Doris. Doris, go ahead. And then the last person would be Denise Rush. So, Doris, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Doris Ray, and I live in Virginia. So my thoughts on some of this reflect the situation here, which is a little bit different in terms of building pedestrian rights of way and who's in control of them then. And so the first thing I'm wondering is, why are we facing this situation with having to put buses out in an island that is separated from the sidewalk by a bike lane? And bike lanes aren't just bike lanes. They are also lanes that have micro-mobility devices traveling on them as well. And my concern is that, as you heard here, for all of us, I'm a blind woman and have ridden the bus all of my life. And it's really a situation of anxiety and lack of access because of the bike lanes being there. And it appears that the people who are in control of establishing whether there will be bike lanes is the planning departments in the various jurisdictions. And I'm wondering what the what the process here is, because it all seems an afterthought that the jurisdictions develop the idea of the bike lanes, and with the bike constituency holding a lot of sway in some jurisdictions, they've kind of taken precedence. So I'm concerned about that. So one of the things that if we have to go to this, it seems to me that the entrance and egress from the bus islands ought to be at pedestrian crossings. Because I think it works best, given the situation, living here in D.C. and having seen the islands develop on K Street and how you get to them and other places where we have islands, and then they were finally made more accessible. And to ensure that those islands are accessible, if there's a lineup of various buses and commuter buses that are taking people. Second thing is that I think there's a planning issue here as well, because right now one of the things the jurisdictions are doing, like Arlington, is setting up cafes, outdoor cafes, because after the pandemic it's become very popular. And those outdoor cafes are blocking even the largest pedestrian sidewalks. They're coming and taking up the space, and in many cases, like in Arlington, they're taking up the best places with the flattest slope on the sidewalk and forcing pedestrians, whether they're blind or whether they're using wheelchairs or other mobility devices, down to the bottom of a slope in order to catch a bus and or get into a subway elevator. So I think there needs to be some recommendation for design of these things. They shouldn't be able to do it on their own through licensing at the local level when it affects the accessibility of the pedestrian rights of way. This is happening in another way, in particularly throughout Arlington, where the jurisdiction is giving license to outdoor cafes, and they take up nearly the entire sidewalk and are not leaving an enforceable, accessible passage for wheelchair users. So those are some of the things that I hope get addressed, and because it is, whatever is on the standards in the books is fine, but if it's not being enforced and the jurisdictions don't buy in, and at least in this state, there is a problem in enforcing accessible traffic signals, jurisdictions wanting to use PAWS instead of. So I just wanted to bring these things to.
Thanks, Doris.
Last thing is the lighting, because new high-intensity lighting is washing out all contrast on navigating pedestrian rights of way and rail stations. Thank you.
Thanks, Doris. Our speakers, Matt Lindley, might be able to address some of the questions that you've raised. Next questioner, and I think it's the last questioner.
This is Ms. Rush. With bus stop telling you where you are, when the bus is coming, and what stop you are at National Harbor, you press the button, it speaks and tells you what bus line it is, when the next bus is coming, and all the information. That is nowhere near any rail service. It's just a bus stop. And you started that 2 years ago, and it's great. But for a blind person, you can press that button, and you know everything. It started. Is it not going to continue?
No, that program is still going to continue. It's a priority. Measure, because you know we have 10,000 bus stops that we serve throughout the region. And
okay, in 2 years, how many more are you going to do, or how many have you completed since then?
I would need to research the exact numbers on how many stops we have that currently have that, and as far as plans on what additional stops would be done. Like I had mentioned, that is now part, there's a digital signage and customer information group within customer experience that's coordinating all of Metro's effort for customer information signage, so they could speak better to the strategic plans moving forward for our signage plans.
Well, could the committee get a report on what has been done in 2 years?
Yeah, Al, could you look up the facts on this and supply us with the information?
Yeah, I can research and find out what the current inventory is of what we have.
Okay. Thank you, Doris and Ms. Rush, for your questions, and Al for your responding. Chair Calabria, at this point, we do not have any more hands up for this topic.
Okay. With respect to what I started out with, I will share the pictures of information that Bahn Germany provides to its bus riders regarding up to 7 or 8 lines and when those buses are expected at a particular stop. So thank you, Al, and your colleagues, Charlie, and anyone else for this, and we look forward to receiving the report regarding the National Harbor type of information that our Vice Chair Denise Rush asked about. Thank you again.
Okay, yep, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Al, Charlie, and Raka for coming to the BRS meeting today. This is Anu, Chair Kalabia. I just wanted to share that Scott Wendley, we might have to re-invite him. He may not be able to join today's meeting. But we do have our team to present the Metro Rail station's December closure, and they would be presenting information about that project.
Okay.
So we have Jamesia John Peterson, Teresa Thomas, Mark Bowman, and I believe Kelly Stoll.
For the record, what is their topic again?
So the topic for this discussion is Red Line Station's December closure that involves three stations, which is Metro Center, Farragut North, and Gallery Place.
Got it. Got it. Please. Whoever is going to speak, started.
Anu, you have the slides. Can you share those?
Okay, one moment. One second, Kelly. Okay, I'm going to start sharing my screen so that everyone, so the presentation would be visible. Okay.
Okay, and Teresa, I'm going to turn it, let you start to talk about the work.
All right. Good evening, everyone. So beginning December 18th, we will have shutdown.
Go to the next slide. There you go.
Right. Thank you. We will have a shutdown. The primary focus of the shutdown is that we have safety critical items that need to be addressed, specifically to deteriorating concrete ceiling from Farragut North to Metro Center. Also, we have other work that needs to be taken care of, such as cable fiber replacement and edge lighting, as well as some items that are going to be addressed by some of our work groups because they have not had a chance to actually have access into this area, being it that it is a core area, primarily downtown. We typically do not do shutdowns or even single tracks in that area, but with the ridership being significantly lower during this time, we saw that it would be a good idea, not only for to handle the safety critical items, but also for anyone else who needed to get work addressed.
Next slide.
Yes. All right, so starting December 18th, we will have Farragut North will be closed for the duration. We also have Metro Center and will still be operational. There will be no red line service to this station. For December 22nd through the 24th, Gallery Place will not have any red line service. And Judiciary Square from December 22nd through the 24th will actually be closed. That is only an extension weekend for 3 days. After that extension weekend, we will reopen Judiciary Square. Red Line service to Gallery Place will resume, and Farragut North will still be out of service until after the 30th, as well as Red Line service at Metro Center will still be unavailable until we close out after the 30th.
Next slide.
Yes, please.
All right. Jamesha. Oh,
yes.
Jamesha, do you want to take over from here?
Yes, thank you. So we will be providing free shuttles at each of the closed stations. We'll have All buses will have ADA accessible equipment on each of the buses. We'll have a mixture of contractor buses, as you can see here in this picture. There will be coach buses that we'll have, and also we'll have a metro bus as well that will be operating this shuttle. We have wheelchair accessible vehicles to accommodate the service specifically for the contractor coaches, as it does take a while for the lift to deploy on the coach buses. So we do have the wheelchair accessible vehicles to accommodate the service. There will be free shuttles that will operate every 6 to 8 minutes during Metro Rail operating hours. And that includes Monday through Thursday between 5 a.m. to midnight, Friday between 5 a.m. to 1 a.m., Saturday between 7 a.m. to 1 a.m. and Sunday between 7 a.m. to midnight. As I mentioned before, we will be providing the free shuttles between the closed stations. We'll have a Shuttle One Express between DuPont Circle and Gallery Place. And this is specifically between December 18th through the 21st, and then again, December 25th through the 30th, we'll be operating this segment. DuPont Circle to Gallery Place on the Express. Shuttle 2 Express will include DuPont Circle to Farragut West, and then Shuttle 3 will have a local shuttle that will operate between DuPont Circle, Farragut North, Metro Center, and Gallery Place. During the time of December 22nd through the 24th, we'll have a Shuttle One Express that will operate. I'm sorry, can you go back? That will operate between DuPont Circle to Union Station. And then we'll have a local shuttle that will operate between DuPont Circle and Union Station. And we'll operate the Shuttle 2 Express between DuPont and Farragut West. And that, again, is only for the weekend of December 22nd through the 24th. Next slide. Thank you. The travel times we expect to take between 16 to 30 minutes, depending on where you're traveling to. So we have shuttles between DuPont Circle and Metro Center that we are expecting to take 16 to 20 minutes on the local line. Shuttles between DuPont Circle and Gallery Place, we're expecting to take 18 to 22 minutes. And that again is the express. And then there are a variety of Metro bus options that we offer, one of which we included here, which is the Metro Bus 33 between Glover Park and Farragut West. We are expecting to take about 25 to 30 minutes at peak traffic. Metro Rail between Farragut West and Metro Center will take 4 minutes between those two stations. And then rail service will operate every 3 minutes at Farragut West during rush hours. Again, that express between DuPont Circle and Farragut West would be a great option for our customers that are looking to enter into the core quickly. They can take rail if needed to go to Metro Center as an alternative.
All right. This is Kelly Stoll, S-T-O-L-L. These are, I'm sure you're all aware of our Yellow Apron teams that are out. They will all be out in force during this shutdown, as well as having been trained to assist those with disabilities. Next slide. And this is where you can find additional information regarding the closure, as well as travel alternatives.
Is that it?
That's it.
Well, I have one question. You know, you tell us
how much time it will take for a shuttle to get from one place to the next. Why don't we have a hypothetical? A person who is going from, say, Woodley Park National Zoo to Union Station would take so much time on the Red Line. But now, with the shuttle being needed, what will the time be between Woodley Park National Zoo and Union Station, having to get off and get on a shuttle? I know you don't have the answer to that now, but could you give us an answer so we can have a better idea as to the time required in these new constraints? Hello?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so so customers will have a different option. So they can take the Red Line and travel from Woodley Park, get off at DuPont Circle, and then get on the shuttle, the express shuttle, which is expected to take about 22 minutes to Gallery Place. And then enter back on the Red Line to continue travel to Union Station. So I don't have the rail part, but I would say that it's averaging between 4 to 5 minutes between each station and the core.
Jamisha, this is Anu. Chair Calabia, I just have a quick comment. If you could share, Jamisha or Kelly, anyone in the team, whether this information would be updated in the trip planner.
I was just going to say the trip planner is expected to be updated in the next week to 10 days. So people will be able to enter their information and get an estimated time at that point.
Could you, for the committee, for the subcommittee, give us an example of the difference in time between going directly, usually from Woodley Park National Zoo to Union Station without these need for shuttles, and then the alternative, which is coming up around Christmas, what the time would be between Woodley Park and National Zoo, and then adding on how much time it will require to take the shuttle and get to Union Station. Just need that one example of the difference in time, the difference in the additional time. I'd appreciate that. Any other questions from the members?
Chair Calabia, this is Anu. Doris has her hand up, so Doris, go ahead with your question. There you go.
Yeah, thanks. I understand the need for the construction and everything you all are doing. My concern is, number one, I think it's very important to have announcements throughout the system prior to and during this period, if particularly on the Virginia side, if you're coming from somewhere up the Silver Line or, you know, out in Vienna or further out. I don't think it will be good. A lot of people, if they know where they're going and they know they're taking the rail to get there, they don't necessarily look it up on the planner or call up because they know where they're going and there should be service. And so I think having announcements about this and then on the days of is important. But actually, my feelings about this are a concern about people with disabilities who aren't drivers being able to get where they need to go just before the Christmas holidays and then in the period between Christmas and New Year's in the most efficient way. And my reflection on this joins the articles that I've seen from the arts community and the businesses in the main core area regarding what this is going to do to their business and the ability of people to get into the city, particularly, you know, in the area of the Metro Center and getting on to transportation at Union Station and all the rest of it during that particular period of time. And so, I mean, I'm sure there are other down periods when this might have been done, you know, it might have even been better, you know, at the first of the year. And I'm wondering whether there's any reconsideration since so many people in the public have.
Thank you, Doris. This is Anna. Would anyone in the team like to answer that? Or if I may just add along the lines what Doris is referring to, if Kelly or Mark, if you could just share information about what efforts are being done by WMATA in about sharing information with our ridership, starting with the news article that came in October.
Yes, news articles are going out. It's being promoted on social media. We are working on station and train announcements for prior to and during the rail outage. There will be mobile advertising, both on as well as print, to get the word out to folks for them to look for their travel alternatives. All of the information is being shared via the website. So we are encouraging people to go there to get information. As I mentioned, the customer service folks will be out, I believe, starting at the beginning of December, passing out brochures, like we usually do, with all kinds of information in them as well.
You know, there are numerous churches in that area, and if the major part of this is going to be down Christmas Eve, it really concerns me.
The maintenance has to be done. We don't doubt that. It's just that give us an idea of in real time what these delays make, not just how long it'll take a shuttle bus to go from one place to the other, but what it would take for somebody who wants to go from Woodley Park National Zoo to Union Station. Any other questions on this topic?
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. I see Sandy Newzo has her hand up, and then Denise Rush. So Sandy, go ahead.
Hi, this is Sandy. I just want to say that in the couple of times that I've experienced shutdown on, I don't know, Orange Silver Line out in the, where it affected my commute, so to speak, in and out of the city, the folks with the yellow aprons were fantastically helpful. I mean, I walked out of the train station and needed a bus bridge, as it gets called sometimes, shuttle bus. And they just asked me where I needed to go, took me right to the correct bus. And it worked very smoothly. Yes, I built in a little bit more time for my trip, but it was not that much of an inconvenience. And I'd like to remind people that, you know, for many people who use mobility devices, those folks probably have the option to use a Metro Access paratransit ride. And this is not impacting the paratransit rides at all. This is just for the rail service. And it's not for that long. It's, you know, one long weekend. It's a 10 or maybe 10 days or 2 weeks for the whole project. And I just want to commend Metro for how smoothly I feel that it's worked out when they need to do safety maintenance. So just my positive thoughts. Thank you.
This is Ms. Rush. I don't have a a question, but at 4 a.m. on Channel 4, you get the information about Metro closing and what's closing, very detailed, but there are not a lot of people up at 4 a.m. in the morning. So if WMATA would maybe announce it at the 12 o'clock news or the evening news more often as they do regularly with the 4 a.m., people will be able to notice and pay attention.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is not our within our purview. That is up to the news station to and how they run their programming and information distribution.
All right. Well, maybe if somebody suggests it, I don't know, but they do announce it. But it's 4 a.m. when I'm looking at it. Thank you.
Next question or statement.
Jump in? I appreciate your comment, Sandy, greatly. I truly do. I know that this is a time where many people are being inconvenienced. We do recognize that. We are trying to make sure that we do our best to provide the sufficient service so that customers feel that smooth transition. Yes, you know, you may have to build in additional travel time, but one of the ways that we are also making sure that customers are able to get to where they have to go via shuttles is also providing dedicated bus lanes during this time. As we all know, traffic congestion can be it can get heavy, especially during the peak. So we are working with DDOT to establish those dedicated bus lanes as well to help customers get to where they have to go quickly.
Any other?
Teresa, this is Carol Lopez.
Hi, Carol.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for coordinating all of this. I have a question. When you say dedicated bus lanes, are they painting those lanes so that other people can't get on them, or are they just going, how are they going to monitor that?
So it's already painted. It's the existing dedicated bus lanes on H and I streets in the core, like where Gallery Place is along that path. They're already painted, and then will be, they are currently existing during the peak times. They vary depending on which section you're on. But for this particular shuttle, we'll be extending the times between 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday for the duration of the closure.
Okay, thank you.
Here, Calabria, this is, I know we do not have any additional hands up at this point.
Okay, and I see it's 5:28, and you say that Scott Windley is not coming today?
Yes, we may have to invite him, but Teresa Thomas just raised her hand. So Teresa, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to also piggyback on Jamisha with the bus lane closure. We've also been working with MTPD to ensure that there'll be bus lane enforcement, as well as there'll be patrolling to make sure that our customers that will be utilizing the shuttles, they'll be utilizing the buses, those that'll be going into our open entrances, for the stations, that we'll make sure that they have a safe ride, and not only that, that we also make sure that the traffic will stay in proper flow. So I just wanted to also piggyback and let everyone know that we did think of, you know, extending it out past just signage, but also having presence out there.
Thank you.
This is Anu. Chair Calabria, going back to your question about Mr. Windley. He is unfortunately not able to attend today. So we will re-invite him next month and hope that he will be able to join us at that meeting.
Yeah, it's really important because the standards involved are standards set by the federal government, and the federal government funds many of the things we do, and the local jurisdictions do. The local jurisdictions set up bus islands and that kind of thing. And sometimes we say, well, we can't deal with it because that's a local jurisdiction. But if the standards do have application for what local jurisdictions like Montgomery County or Alexandria or DC does, then some of the problems we've been bringing up can't be put off by, say, WMATA being able to say that it's up to the local jurisdictions. It may be, but the federal government also has a role, and that's why it's important to hear from Scott Winsley about what the requirements, the standards are for anyone using federal funds. If there are no other matters to be, is there any public comment?
Actually, Rico has a comment.
So my question is, the brochure, will it be in Braille? Will the brochure be in Braille?
It will not. We've not done Braille brochures in the past.
Okay. So, example, if you give that to someone blind and deaf, give to them, and they only know Braille, like if you give it to my best friend who is blind and deaf, you give to her and she now learning Braille, how would she read it? So I look at that as, it's like you, I look at that, that you give, put it in Braille for some people who know Braille, who's deaf and blind. I think it would be helpful to give them something in like a brochure in Braille.
Rico, this is Carol Lopez. If there is a customer that requires a reasonable accommodation, a different format, they can contact our office and we will try to provide something reasonable that they could use.
Thank you.
Okay.
That will help one person, but it won't help the community. Any other comments or questions? Anu, are there any members of the public who wanted to speak up?
So Chair Calabia, we can surely begin the public comments. We can just take a quick moment to thank the team for coming and sharing all the information and receiving the feedback from the AAC. Going next to our public comments section, if any members of the public would like to make comments, please either come off of mute and state your comments, or if you're able to raise your virtual hands, please do. While we are waiting for members of the public, I just want to say that we do invite our ridership to provide us with their comments through email, and the email can be sent at metroaacchair@wmata.com, or customers can call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Dr. Posner, I see you raised your hand, so go ahead.
Yes, just to add something to Tino's point about the federal guidelines. And if Ms. Lindley does eventually give us a talk on that, I'll remind the group that there are two federal representatives on the board. And in the past, They have been very good at reminding the rest of the board and the rest of WMATA what the federal government and federal regulations are required. So you might keep in the back of your mind that after we get a presentation, if there is something, we might invite the federal representatives on the board to talk to us about it, or send them a copy of the minutes, or have Patrick present it in his presentation to the board. That's it. Thank you.
Well, that's a good suggestion.
Thank you, Dr. Poser. And yes, these are guidelines yet, not have become standards yet. But we do hope that Mr. Wendley will be able to participate at our December meeting. Any other members of the public?
Sorry, I have two questions.
Okay, go ahead.
The first question I have.
Hey.
I call the schedule my ride. It got disconnect four times today. Okay. My second question is, if a driver is driving a bus, did Patrick get off the bus, pull down her pants, and done whatever she had to do and get back on the bus? Do the driver have to wait until she could doing what she got to do for her to get back on the bus to leave? And she have her personal things on the bus? That is my questions.
Thank you, Rico. And I just want to state, this is Anu. I just want to state that Rico had shared his comments earlier in the day with me. Both of his comments were referred to the respective offices. Rico's first comment is about Metro Access reservations phone line. And Rico, I will share the update with you afterwards. The second comment was referred to the bus division. And as soon as we get any update, I'll be doing a follow-up with you. So thank you.
I see Thomas Mangrum's hand up and also Sandy's hand up.
Yes.
Those related to earlier topics, or did you have new questions or
statements? For me, when you was talking about the subway closing and what have you,
yes.
Farragut and Frisham Heights, it's still a big gap at the landing where wheels or canes could get caught between the train and the landing. So I noticed that at Frisham Heights and Farragut North. So could somebody check that out to make sure the gap is not that wide? Because a person who do not have that much sight and they have to use a cane, why have you, they could easily fall because the cane would go between the train and a landing site. And also for Matheson Square, the elevators, they got two elevators there. And the elevators wasn't working right when I went to press the button to get off the landing site to get to where I have to go to the gate to go up on the elevator. So I had to ask for help from the people at that site to make sure the elevator was working. So could somebody check the elevators to make sure the elevator is working all the time, not just sometimes, because the elevators just started breaking down. The elevators just work sometimes at the subway site, and other times it don't work at all. Thank you.
Cindy, you still have your hand up? Or?
Yes, this is Sandy, and this has to do with a topic for the Metro Access Subcommittee. Can I mention it if we have enough time here?
Go ahead.
Okay, so I live out in Reston, and now that the Silver Line goes out to Dulles Airport and beyond into Loudoun County, I find it very confusing whether Metro Access goes out to Loudoun County. I know I've heard comments that Loudoun Paratransit wants to manage the Metro Access type rides out in Loudoun County. And Anu, I was wondering if it would be possible to, I don't think Paul is on the meeting tonight, but if it could be mentioned as a possible topic for the next Metro Access Subcommittee meeting.
Sure, Sandy, we will definitely put that as a recommendation.
Yes.
Thank you. And as a general guideline, Metro Access will serve within 3/4 of a mile. And I believe Mr. Blake had also shared that at a couple of the meetings.
Yes, this is Thomas. I'm sorry, Anu.
Go ahead.
Is this like a new extension for Metro Access to serve that it wasn't serving before? Is it possible for the next Metro Access committee meeting that we all know how far it goes into Allen County? Because it might not cover the whole part of it. So we all know how to set up our Metro Access rides, please.
This is Ms. Rush. I'm the vice chair of Metro Access. If you have a specific address, you can call and give the address to the reservation line, and they will tell you if that address is covered.
Thank you for adding that information, Ms. Rush.
One last thing that we still have almost 20 minutes. Phil, you made an excellent suggestion. I was not on the Accessibility Advisory Committee when there was any interaction with representatives from the Access Board. Do you recall, Phil, who in particular has been helpful from the Access Board?
Yes, actually, the gentleman who passed away last week that we had a moment of silence for was the federal representative, and he repeatedly reminded the rest of the board that Metro Access was a requirement of the federal government and federal funding. So he was one that was very, very useful. The other alternate, who was a federal representative from DC, would repeatedly remind the board about accessibility things from the ADA. So there are several. And of course, you know, Sarah Klein is one of the federal representatives on the board. And the other two representatives from the board both have disabilities. So they would be very useful. Because in addition to being federal representatives, they also represent national disability organizations. So it would be nice to invite them. You know, we always usually have a standing invite to board members. But those three in particular, you might do with a specific goal in mind, and that is to discuss sidewalk access.
Right. Okay, so Sarah Klein is one specific person. If you ever remember who else might have been someone we've interacted with in the past, we'd appreciate knowing. If there are no other questions or statements from members of the AA, the Bus Rail Subcommittee, or the public, and there seem to be none, could I call for a motion to adjourn?
I so move, Tino.
Thank you, Steve. Is there a second to Steve's motion to adjourn?
This is Sandy. I'll second that.
And a vote on the motion to adjourn. Can I have that? Hearing no objection, is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tino.
Thank you, excellent meeting.